And on this edition of St. Teresa's On the Air, we welcome no longer the new kid on the block, Deacon John Johnson. Welcome.
Welcome to you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here.
Yeah, glad you got to join us. We've spoken with Deacon Jay, and we've spoken with Deacon Mike, and now we're speaking with you. You're no longer the new kid on the block, because now we have a fourth deacon.
That's right.
Deacon Dan, and we'll talk to him eventually, but. You were the new kid on the block for a while.
I was.
As opposed to one of the Backstreet Boys or one of those other boy bands that are correct. Out there. But so we're glad we finally get a chance to talk to you.
Like I said, I'm honored to be here. This is great.
Well, that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about you. I mean, obviously I know a little bit about you, but the parish at large and of course the community at large might not know a lot about you. You were it's kind of interesting, you know, for people that might not know you, from to becoming a deacon from your vocation prior to being a deacon.
Well, that's a heck of a way to put it.
It's an interesting transition, if you will, because you were involved in law enforcement.
Yeah, but. It really is not different.
Yeah, you're it's going from enforcing one set of laws to another. Anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, one set of laws to another.
You know, you continue your service to the community, and that's what I'm into.
Let's go back. Let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay, I was born in Bitburg, West Germany.
Really?
In 1957, during the heavy part of the Cold War.
Were you a military child?
Yes, I was. I'm an Air Force brat.
Oh, okay.
So, when we moved from time to time, let's see, we spent 4 years in Germany, went back. We were at Moody Air Force Base once, Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, Las Vegas, Nevada, Nellis Air Force Base. And Bitburg and Spangdahlem in Germany. My father originally started in the missile program during the 1950s, so he increased his rank a lot faster than most. He was a staff sergeant within a few years, when it usually takes about 10.
Mm-hmm.
He retired. We moved back to Nashville, Georgia, where my grandparents lived. Graduated high school there. Went on to Valdosta State College. Got a four-year bachelor's degree in criminal justice. Was hired by the public safety department where I did my internship. Spent a year with them. Then got hired by the United States Marshal's Office as what they call a... temporary. You had carried all the advantages, you just could not work more than 39 hours a week.
Okay.
From there, I decided to get married to Joanne Haggerty, one of the large families in this community. I was around 1981, and I had to get a better job, full-time, so I got hired by the Albany Police Department. Spent 7 years there, including the last two riding a motorcycle. I love motorcycles, so I was riding one for a few years. Went to the Daugherty County District Attorney's Office, where I spent almost 30 years. And that was an adventure. You learn more about your community and about Southwest Georgia as if you work for the District Attorney's Office as an investigator, because you go everywhere.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yes. Retired in 2014, with full retirement. Then one day, while I decided to go to daily mass, because I had never done that, and I always wanted to, Father Stanton grabbed me and took me to dinner that night and asked me if I would apply for the diaconate, which I did, because to me, that was the next step for me, because I was asking God, what else is there? I mean, I go to Mass, I pray. What else is there? There has to be more. And so being offered the opportunity to learn more about the Catholic faith and becoming an ordained deacon, I fell right in line.
So let's talk about a little bit about your excuse me, your Catholic background. Were you a cradle Catholic?
I was born Catholic.
Born Catholic.
My mother is Catholic. My father was Methodist. But Mom made me go to Mass as often as possible. There was no Saturday night partying and not and missing Mass the next day. If you partied that night, you went to Mass the next morning.
Uh-huh.
My mother tells me that around the age of 10, I went to Mass on my own when others didn't go. I'd still go. And her grandfather finally looked at my mother, her father, and said, he's going to be a priest. So when we moved to Nashville, Georgia, there was only one small little church, and guess who was the only male boy that went to Mass? Me. Guess what else? That made me the only altar server for the for that Mass.
Okay.
And I had two priests there, Father Brendan Timmons and Father Cyril Gavitt. And they were totally Irish, and they were up to something. I figured it out when I got 21. They wanted me to become a priest because they were leading me down that road, you know, between being a Eucharistic minister, lector, at the young age that I was. So I headed down that road. Then one day, my kids were at St. Teresa's school. The two daughters completed all 8 years. My wife says, why don't you go coach soccer? Because the girls want to play soccer, and they don't have a coach. I said, okay. So I started coaching soccer for the next 10 years. And followed in line with that, I coached softball, baseball, basketball, sometimes all three at once, which meant that I would walk on a field and say, okay, what we're doing on this one. That led to one day, Ward Shinsius was the youth minister coordinator. He asked me to take a summer trip with him. They used to go to what's called Heart Camp. So I went down. All I had to do was drive a van. That's what I was told. Little did I know.
Yeah. What happened after you were through driving the van?
They said, you're going to be assigned a group. And I went, oh, no. So a group of teenagers. And I saw something that year that really changed my faith. I began to realize that being Catholic is easier than most people think. I was volunteering, and the woman wanted a screen door fixed. When we asked the people in charge, they had no screening. On the second day, I caught her looking at her screen door and realized she just wanted to have the wind come into her house, the fresh air. Well, we decided as a group we weren't going to let that go by. We weren't leaving without doing it. So reached in my back pocket, bought all the stuff I needed. Next morning, the last day, we put her screen doors, and I have never seen an individual more happier than that day. It was like a light went off. I went to Heart Camp and helped out the youth group for the next 6 years. When all of a sudden, Lord Shinsius decided to retire from it, and he was going to move closer to his kids. And next thing I know, I'm volunteering to be the youth coordinator. Spent the next 7 years doing that. And that was a wonderful adventure. But I also felt at that point, I was being prepared for something. I just didn't know what it was. And then, of course, I became a deacon.
So, becoming a deacon is a five-year process?
Well, when you add in the year of waiting around to see if you're going to be accepted, it's 6 years.
Okay.
There's 4 years of college training in theology. They let you sign up for a degree or a certificate, whatever you wanted to do, with St. Leo University out of Tampa. They have apparently satellite offices in various places, so they were able to put teachers with us learning the theology and the history of the church and you name it. My favorite class was philosophy. In high school, I didn't even understand what philosophy meant. I was having trouble with it. But when I got into that class, it was like a light went off again. Randy realized that the Catholic Church teachings are philosophy-based, so that you can ask questions, and there's always another question that follows up. You know you get your answer. Then the last year course is preparation for what you have to do as a deacon, including doing homilies, the mass, and even burials, baptisms, which is what deacons can do.
So what is your what have you found to be the most rewarding aspect of being a deacon thus far? Well, how long you've been a deacon for? What,
2 years?
2 years so far. So what's been your most rewarding aspect of being a deacon thus far?
Before I was asked to become a deacon, my wife saw an article in the newspaper about ramp crews at Southwest Georgia Council on Aging. Since I had time on my hands after retiring, she said, why don't you go do that? And I did. So I went down. Next thing I know, I'm in charge of a ramp crew. They wanted a second one. That has been the most rewarding part of my diaconate.
Building the ramps, that's for handicapped folks, right?
Yes. And the reward is just, you know, you're doing something for your community and you're changing the life of another human being. It's awesome to watch. My favorite was we built a ramp for a nice 16-year-old who was everything. She had no leg muscles. Her body wasn't. She had never been able to get out of the house with her wheelchair. She had a power chair that had to sit outside in the rain. So we were asked to build a ramp for her. We got halfway through it on one day because we were a little bit, we didn't have that many at that time working on it. And the next day, her mother tells us as we're finishing up the ramp that the day before, her daughter woke up 2 hours early and wanted to know if she could use it. And she said, her mother told us that she would ride down and go back and ride down because it was her first time ever being able to get out of the house in her wheelchair and get in. Now, if you don't think that doesn't change the way you see things, then...
That's awesome.
Yeah. There have been a lot of times where some of the people, they didn't give you much of a thank you, but it didn't matter. You know, we still understand that we're doing it for them. We're helping our community, and that's what was more important. But I always instill the idea, even with my ramp crew, to talk to the resident, to talk to them, find out whatever it is that's bothering them, maybe talk to them, learn a little bit about them. In some cases, the individual would just grab us and hug us after it was done, in tears, because they'd never been able to go out of the house. They couldn't, you know, somebody would have to carry them if they had to go to the doctor. So the reward is very simple. It's not a full where I feel good about myself.
All right.
I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about them.
You know, I notice a running theme in the things that you're telling me about. Basically, when someone asks you to do something or you end up doing something, it seems like within minutes you end up in charge of it.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing. Not quite sure why. I think it was the preparation that those two Irish priests did years ago. I think they were preparing me for this. And
quite possibly maybe some good leadership skills you might have learned along the way, too.
As an investigator with the DA's office, as a coach, you have to learn how to be a true leader because you're going to have to convince people to do things that they don't want to do or have to talk to them about things that have to happen, even though it's going to be a little tough for them.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably a skill that takes serious finesse.
Yes, it does. It does take a lot of finesse. But sometimes you have to tell them the harsh truth. You just have to. Because they don't understand, or they just want to give up. Mm-hmm. Because the system is really lengthy. It's time consuming.
So what is next for Deacon John? What do you see the next several years of your diaconate being?
Well, we'll obviously stick with the three main duties, which is preach the gospel, say the gospel, and do works of mercy. I'm into works of mercy. I will always do that. That's just a volunteerism I love, you know, because you really do make a difference. You really do. Preaching the gospel is fun.
What's your favorite homily subject?
Ooh, tough one.
Because you've given some good ones. What's your favorite one that you've done?
I think the last one I did. It was on how the gospel and the first reading entailed what the Eucharist was about to become. Feeding of the 5,000 was just nothing more than a prelude to how Jesus was going to run church or leave what they needed to do. I mean, breaking the bread, giving it to the apostles, who were now the priests, and they gave it to the community. That tells me a lot about how the Eucharist came to be what it is today. I also was using the model of the priesthood, because the first one was about Melchizedek, the priest of God and king of Salem, which would later become Jerusalem. And he thanked Aaron by bringing out bread and wine as a thank you. The first beginnings of the use of wine and bread as a thank you. And if you read the gospel, if you read the Old Testament through Leviticus, Numbers, you'll find that the priests back then actually had to put the bread on the altar. Every week they changed it out to fresh. And the reason for that was to remind the people of what God did for them when Moses took them away. Because one of the things that God instructed them to do was make unleavened bread for the journey. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yes, it
does. The Eucharist is for our journey through life toward the ultimate salvation.
Well, great. Well, speaking of on the journey, we're about at the end of our journey on this broadcast. Do you have any final words you would like to leave our audience with?
Stick with the Mass. Don't let it go. I realize in this day and time that we have a hard way of trying to get people to understand what the Mass is. I've heard it many times where I don't like the priest, I don't like the bishop, I don't like the pope, and I get nothing out of the Mass, and I find that unusual. Whether the priest is good or bad makes no difference. You should not base your participation in your faith on a priest or a bishop or even a pope. You know, in the history of the Catholic Church, we've had fantastic popes and we've had unfantastic popes. So being human means they're going to make mistakes, and you have to let that go. Right?
Well, the Mass is bigger than all of it.
Most people do not do what I've done. Close your eyes and just listen. Don't participate. Just listen. When the people say the prayers, how you can think that that is not important or not a motivation to continue is really beyond me. How you can go to Eucharist and accept something that is the body and blood of Christ and don't believe in that, even though there are commands in our gospel that say you should, that it is the body and blood of Christ. You know, the Gospel of John chapter 6 is clear. Take my body and my blood. Then when you look at the Last Suppers and the other three synoptic gospels, you realize that this is what Jesus wanted us to do as part of our worship and service. So, and that's for me, that's the most important part of the Mass. And it's so inspiring to watch the crowd who believe the same thing you do go up and accept that body. To me, that is, I love watching it. Smiles, faith, all of it is encumbered right when we do communion. Let's see, the blessing of the throat. I had an interesting thing. I was a child, about 7, maybe 6, walks up, looks at me and says, "This is my first time." So when you get to do that, you realize that you're changing people's lives. They get to realize that being Catholic is simple. 1, love God. 2, love your neighbor. If you stick with that, all of everything else falls in line. And it's so simple to love someone, even a person you don't know, by opening a door for them, saying thank you, or how are you. People realize, in this town, I got news for you, when I go around this town, go to shopping, or whatever it is I'm doing, I am surprised at the number of people that will open a door for somebody that they don't even know, will say thank you, or bless you, or give you kind words. It's awesome to see in this community. And I want that to increase. I want people to know what God is really all about.
That sounds like a good plan.
I'm working on it.
Sounds good. Deacon John, thanks for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. Like I said, I'm honored to be here.
All right. We'll see you on Sunday.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve.